Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 29, 2022. Record reflect times 3:35 p.m. We have present today Senator Costello, Senator Kawasaki, myself, Chair Schauer. Please turn off your cell phones. Staff assisting us is Naresh, Nancy, and Nate. Four bills on the agenda, plus we have some governor appointees. We'll get to those appointees first, but we have Senate Bill 66, Senate Joint Resolution 20, Senate Bill 207, Senate Bill 195. And for the DOA Commissioner, Ms. Paula Varna, and personal board is Keith Hamilton. So we're going to start off with those to get those moving. At this time, we'd like to go ahead and pull up the commissioner appointee to the table. Since you're here to go in the hot seat in person, it's kind of nice. Usually they're just on the phone. So if you need him up here, that's fine. But you can come up. Okay. So you know how it works. When you're ready, put yourself on the record. Name, affiliation, and why are you seeking the appointment? Or, I guess, the commission spot.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Schauer. And thank you, members of the State Affairs Committee, for your consideration of my appointment today. For the record, my name is Paula Varana, and I am the commissioner designee for the Department of Administration. So, Chair Schauer, what I was hoping to do is just to walk through some of my background, my education experience, and a little bit about myself personally, if that's acceptable.
Bring it.
Great. To introduce myself just a bit, I have a degree in business administration from Boise State University. I also attended the University of Puget Sound in Tacoma. I have a Juris Doctorate degree from the University of Idaho. I have been practicing law in the state of Alaska since 1998. My work experience started with the law firm of Brunabell and Clarkson, where I practiced oil and gas law and also served for much of that time as the managing attorney for that firm. So I spent about 13 years there as a practicing attorney and also worked there as a law clerk, bringing my total time there to about 15 years. We practice mostly oil and gas administrative law, and as you can well imagine, it's very dense, thick, dry work. And so I found myself really wishing that I could really work with people and a broader base of people in my professional career. So I decided to transition into executive leadership, and I did that by accepting the position of chief executive officer for Copper River Native Association. I worked there for about a little over 3 years, and while I was there, very proud of this project, we constructed from groundbreaking to grand opening a new health facility in the Glen Allen area. It was a beautiful, fantastic facility that offers health services, behavioral health services, tribal and community services, as well as dental services. So it was an amazing project. It was about $20 million. We finished that on time and on budget. And I was able to really have the opportunity to start the project from, you know, from start to finish, selecting the architects, selecting the engineers, seeing the construction through and through grand opening. So it was a great experience. After that, I took about 4 years off, and I stayed home with my two sons, and we had a great time on our farm. We played a lot of hockey and had a lot of fun farm adventures, so that was also a wonderful time in my life. After that, I became the executive director for Hospice of Anchorage for about a year. Again, it was really my privilege to work for that organization, to work with a group of people that are so committed to providing compassionate care to people at the end of life and helping their families through usually what is the most difficult time in a person's life. So that was very meaningful work for me. At the beginning of Governor Dunleavy's administration, I moved into the Department of Administration. So I have been with the department for about 3 years, most of that serving as the deputy commissioner, which has given me the opportunity to learn the department, to become familiar with all of the different and diverse services that the department provides to other state departments, as well as to the people of Alaska. So with that familiarity, it has been a learning experience at the department. Every day I think that I learn something new. A little bit about me personally, I have been married for almost 27 years. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, raised in Skagway. My parents were both born in Skagway, so I definitely consider Skagway still my home, even though I've been away now for a long time. Very special place, and I still, you know, it holds a special place in my heart. My family's still in Skagway, much of it. The other part of my family is in Wasilla. We've lived in Wasilla for about 24 years. My oldest son is a senior at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in the mining engineering program. My youngest son is a student at Colony High School in Palmer. And as I mentioned, we have a farm in the valley that is really my real passion. But as you can well imagine, we don't have a whole lot of time for that these days with what I have on my plate. But it is something that I love very much. We're an all-Alaskan family. We love to hunt and fish, and that pretty much sums up my background.
Okay, thank you very much for that intro, and I'll open it up to the committee for questions. Senator Costello.
Thank you, and Commissioner-elect, congratulations for being appointed as a designee to, I think, one of the most important departments we have in state government. As you know, you have many different programs that help all of the departments and help with, you know, the smooth everyday workings of, you know, of state government. So I just want to mention that. And I'm really encouraged that you were the deputy commissioner, because I think, as you mentioned, that it's really an important, view, because you're there, you're right there in that office, and you know almost better than anybody, you know, what the challenges are, you know, of the commissioner for the department. So kudos to you. I just have two questions. My first is, you know, what is your vision for the Department of Administration? And then my second question is about the vacancies, including the one, the deputy commissioner position that's now vacant, and any other vacancies that are in the department, and what your plan is for filling those, and if there's any challenges related to trying to fill some of the positions that we know are unfilled. Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair. Thank you, Senator Costello. Great questions. I'll start with answering your first question, which is my plan for the department for the next year. And what I would like to do, it's very straightforward. I would like to see the department finish well what we've begun. And I'm referring to the several large initiatives that we've had underway within the department, some for several years. And those are the consolidations of information technology, human resources, the Office of Procurement and Property Management, as well as, accounts payable and travel, shared services of Alaska. Some of those consolidations are in a more mature state. The two that are really, I would consider mature are the human resource consolidation and the shared services of Alaska, accounts payable, travel consolidation. Those are much more mature. I would like to focus the next year on completing the consolidations for the Office of Information Technology and the Office of Procurement and Property Management. So much of our work at the leadership level will be focused on completing those consolidations. I think it'll be it is something that has been definitely well received by the department, by our employees. I think that we would really like to see these consolidations wrapped up. They've been underway for a long time. So that is something that I would like to do. I also wanted just to mention that you will see under my leadership a strong commitment and policy and culture of providing excellent customer service for everyone that we serve. And the Department of Administration, we serve the legislature, we serve your constituents, we serve the public to, you know, to a degree in some of our divisions, and we also serve the other departments in the state. So that will start with me, and we will be committed to providing that that level of customer service. To answer your question about vacancies, the department originally had three deputy commissioners. About a year and a half ago, I believe, one of the deputy commissioner positions was eliminated. And so the department now has two deputy commissioners. We've had one of those positions filled continuously since my time, you know, since the beginning of the administration. One position has been filled continually. The other, we've had a vacancy since about October. We filled that vacancy several weeks ago with an acting deputy commissioner. So, and to address that, you know, we definitely felt the absence of a deputy commissioner. We absolutely felt that on our leadership team in terms of, you know, it really is a large department with a lot going on. And, you know, for those months that we were without the second deputy commissioner, I was overseeing many divisions directly, and it is definitely a lot of work. So we've had that position filled for several weeks now. The vacancies in general for the state have absolutely been a challenge. Just like the private sector, we have struggled with vacancies. The Division of Motor Vehicles comes to mind as one of the divisions I think that has struggled the most with recruitment for a variety of reasons. I think some of that has been due to COVID. Some of that is due to we aren't able to offer telework at the Division of Motor Vehicles to a great degree. For some people we can, but in a large part it's not something we're able to offer. And also, you know, they're entry-level positions, and they tend to be harder to fill, I think, across the state and even in the private sector. So their vacancy factor was hovering at about 20%. I do believe they're doing just a bit better lately in the past couple of months. I think we're doing a bit better with our vacancy factor there. We have seen vacancy challenges with the Public Defender's Office and the Office of Public Office of Public Advocacy. We've struggled a bit to recruit attorneys as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that update. I too have heard about the challenges at the Division of Motor Vehicles. I think it's one of the divisions that has probably more interaction with the public than probably on par with any other that does. I mean, I know many divisions in our state government do. And I was just hoping, too, that you could talk about some of the innovation that you're spearheading at the department. I know that we've talked about some of those things that you're doing, and if you want to just maybe pick something and share with the committee something that you're doing that's innovative or new. What comes to mind for me is office space and how you've sort of merged both at home and in office opportunities for state employees.
Through the chair, thank you for that question. And we have a few things that I can point to, but I think one of the most important areas where we have really been able to move very nimbly is in the area of telework. At the beginning of COVID, there were very few people or employees of the state that were teleworking, and we were able to adjust and ramp up our telework capability very, very quickly, within really a matter of weeks at the Office of Information Technology, which is really impressive in my mind. We were able to allow thousands of employees to telework. So we did that, you know, in a variety of ways, but it definitely, you know, we kind of attacked it from all levels. We purchased laptops as one of our biggest, you know, purchases to allow remote telework for employees, and that proved to be, you know, a wonderful tool. So we bought thousands of laptops for that. So that was, I think, a big success for the department, really, and that's a massive shift to telework. And that continues to be something that, you know, that we are using as a tool for recruitment and retention as well. When we say we are able as a state to have a hybrid telework policy for, you know, in the areas that we are able to do that, you know, it is something that can be seen as a benefit to people looking for work.
Thank you.
I have one, and then I think it looks like Senator Kawasaki does as well. So a little bit of a different question for you. When we're dealing with something like DOA that covers really the broad spectrum and provides services to all the agencies, so you're kind of an umbrella administrative function, if you will, and you look at things like OIT consolidation and others, one of the questions I have for you is, knowing that sometimes it is good for a leader, a governor or lieutenant governor, for example, to get feedback that isn't always politically the most accepted, what is your position on how would you handle that if you looked at things and said, well, you know, governor, that's not a good idea, or I don't agree with that? In other words, what I'm asking is your style of leadership and management such that you would be willing to tell the governor that the emperor is wearing no clothes, or is that the kind of thing that you would shy away from? And I ask it for a reason, because we've seen that a few times, and I think sometimes we want to get honest feedback. And so you and I have had some very frank discussions about that, and I think you're the kind that would fit into the former category, not the latter. So I'm just curious on if you see things that are happening with budgets, with procedures, cyber that we're dealing with, how do you plan to handle that as far as informing leadership and working with the governor and informing him of the challenges we face?
Thank you, Chair Schauer. Another excellent question. My approach to something like that, if I were presented with a situation where the governor's office had asked for something, or if there was an area that they were approaching that I had concerns with, I would begin more than likely with consulting my leadership team in the area that involves whatever the issue may be. You know, if it involved, you know, the Office of Information Technology, I would consult with our Chief Information Officer, Bill Smith. If it had to do with personnel and labor relations, I would more than likely consult Kate Sheehan. So I would consult my leadership team, usually, as my approach to become informed and to to hear what the experts may have to say about that. And then I absolutely would share my honest feedback with the governor's office, with the governor directly, and I absolutely would lay out what my team has developed. If there were concerns, I would outline those concerns to the governor or the governor's office.
Thank you for that. I think it's hard for policymakers to make good decisions when they don't get all the data in its most raw form. And I see that too often here in government, that we hide the truth for our own reasons or just fear of not wanting to pass that along. Senator Kawasaki?
Just briefly, to sort of dovetail off Senator Costello's question, specifically in DMV, you know, we've heard three administrations talk about the DMV entry-level positions are basically the same pay that you would get if you worked at McDonald's. And these people are qualified individuals that deal with personal information, all those types of things. Is there a way that you would suggest to the governor that we could find, whether it's an increase in wages? We have been talking about in this legislature perhaps bringing back a tier 4 defined benefit system. Are there things that you're looking at right now?
Through the chair, thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Definitely, the DMV has faced, you know, challenges for several years, and as I mentioned earlier, the past couple of years with COVID, you know, it's been even more, you know, it's been even more serious. We have approached the vacancy situation and the recruitment challenges at the Division of Motor Vehicles in some creative ways. We have for example, we've tried to have, if we are able to accommodate, slightly different schedules for employees that, you know, that if they can trade, you know, perhaps work a little earlier, stay a little later. So we've tried to approach, you know, things like flexibility, like I mentioned before, telework when it's possible for that position, when it's appropriate. And for example, for our call center, which is, you know, sometimes entry level folks, that is absolutely something that can be very suitable to telework. We've also engaged the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations, and we are working with that division to develop, you know, our strategy for long-term workforce planning. They have expanded their partnerships with other states to try to, you know, learn from, you know, what other states are doing. We also have, I would say, we have, I'm trying to think of how to say this. I think we have acknowledged the problem at the Division of Motor Vehicles, as you say, for quite some time, and we are addressing that problem. One of the other things that we are doing, we have in the works, we have requested a class study. Those take quite some time. So they're not something that happens overnight, but that is something that we are hoping to move forward to address levels of pay.
Follow up?
Yeah. So on the class study, the class study is currently it's currently moving forward, or what's the status of that class study?
Through the chair. It is in the beginning stages of the process. So it has been developed. The request has been made. I believe at this time it is with the Division of Personnel and Labor Relations. I believe the next step may be the Office of Management and Budget. So it is in the beginning stages, and I don't anticipate that it will be done, you know, within the next few months. I think it will be probably longer than 6 months, I would anticipate.
Thank you.
I have another one to follow up. So former Commissioner Shibaka and I had talked exclusively. It's something she had helped do while she served in D.C., and it was similar to what the military has for an inspector general. And the reason for that is because, as I see the state of Alaska, there's nobody watching the watchers. And the appointees we have at the very top level are exactly that. They're political appointees. That would include the attorney general. And you can see there's a clear conflict of interest in my mind, because the attorney general may not want to do anything. It's why I asked you the question, what would you tell the governor if you saw things that were perhaps antithetical to his own agenda? He needs to know that, right? We need people to inform us of that, even if ultimately you have to salute smartly and do, you know, what the governor tells you to do, or make a different career path decision. Would you support the effort to create an inspector general type office that would allow us to have a independent person and group that is outside of the chain of command of the current structure, so that we could have somebody that would, in essence, watch the watchers? I'm just curious on thoughts on it. Former commissioner agreed that was something we should do. We didn't get very far in the last session. It's just a possible path that we could take. And I don't know if she had spoken with you about it, and I don't believe I'd asked you about it, but I'm just curious if you see any impediments from your perspective as the commissioner, because it would work, obviously, with DOA in a lot of the aspects it would have, if you're even familiar with the term.
Thank you, Chair Schauer. I am familiar to a degree with that function and former Commissioner Shibaka's efforts in that area. She did stand up an Office of Oversight and Review and it was intact for a short period of time. I would support that function going forward. I'm not exactly sure where the function should reside, if it's properly placed in the Department of Administration, or if it should be somewhere else, but I absolutely would support that function wholeheartedly.
Thank you, Senator Costello. I think you had another question? No? Senator Kawasaki? Okay. Well, seeing no other questions for you at this time, if you don't mind just staying there for a moment, we're going to have public testimony. Was that for her, the first one?
No.
For both? Okay, so it looks like we will have somebody online. So we're going to go ahead at this time for a moment. Just keeping the hot seat is open public testimony. So we're going to open public testimony on the commissioner appointee for the Department of Administration. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, it looks like we do have Andrew McLeod online from the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, I do.
Okay, if you would, please put yourself on the record with name, who you represent, your current location, and if you could keep it to about 2 minutes, I'll time you, but please go ahead.
Well, I'm on here to testify for Keith Hamilton for the Personnel Board.
Okay, so you did not want to testify for the Governor's Department of Administration Commissioner, is that correct?
Well, if I could just say one thing. I hope that the Commissioner...
Andrea, before you do that, if you could just put yourself on the record.
Records requests that have been filed that the administration department has not been responsive to.
Okay. Andrea, I'm gonna ask you to do one thing if you could. If you go ahead and just put yourself on the record so it will be entered that way and then ask your question or make your comment and we'll do it the right way. Yep, go ahead.
My name is Andrea McLeod, and I am calling on behalf of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. I do have concerns about the division of personnel. For the past 2 years, we've been putting in public records requests for audio recordings, and the director has been unresponsive to many of them. It's been months that we're waiting for these records, and repeated requests go in all the time, and we don't hear any response to even the emails. So I would hope that this commissioner, although Dave Donnelly is the one who's been given the authority to for public records requests, I hope that she would be she would follow the Alaska Public Records Act, our public records laws, and be more responsive in a more timely manner, which is 10 working days from when the request was submitted.
Okay. Thanks, Andrea. We'll hold your name up here as well for the next one. So we'll continue on, but that's for the record and a question perhaps for you to address at a later time. And I see no one else online to testify, correct? We're going to go ahead and close public testimony, and I'll just give you, if you have any last comments before we clear you off the hot seat, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much for your consideration today. I really appreciate the time. I hope you'll vote for my confirmation. Yes.
Thank you very much. You got a big job ahead of you because it's a busy spot. So thanks for coming in to testify today. And we're going to move on to our second one today is Mr. Hamilton. Mr. Hamilton, can you hear me okay? Okay. Teams may have fallen off because it went away. So Keith, if you can hear me in any form at all, if you're watching online, calling in might be an option as well. And we'll see if you pop into the phone system before Teams comes back up, we'll be patient here. We can. Yeah, it's coming right up if you reset. So there he is. Okay, so we don't have to take an at ease and do a whole phone call. Keith, can you hear me okay?
I sure can, sir.
Yes, sir. So when you're ready, put yourself on the record, please, with your name. Who you represent is yourself in this one, obviously. And if you would give us your presentation on why you'd like the position, you have the floor.
Thank you, Senator. Great to be with you from Knott's Berry Farm today in a meeting. But I'm looking forward to a few minutes to share a little bit about me and what I am currently doing, serving our state, as well as hopes to continue on with the personnel committee. For the record, Dr. Keith Hamilton. I'm a 21-year Alaskan, fairly new to Alaska. I'm a proud dad of three children, last one out of the nest this year. And my wife, Debbie, is executive director of New Hope Counseling Center in Soldotna as well. I serve as the president of Alaska Christian College. I've been there 21 years, a founding president, and have celebrated the work that we do with Alaska Native college students. We have around 100 students from rural Alaska that come in and will spend 2 years or more working on their AA degrees. We have 4 degrees that we offer, and I oversee about 66 staff in total. So I work with personnel quite a bit. I have a doctorate in youth and family culture, and I also serve on 2 other state boards concurrently. I've been 6 years with the Alaska State Board of Education, currently serve as the first vice chair And I also am a commissioner on the Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Education. My role in the Personnel Board has been fulfilling. This is actually my third go-around. They're six-year appointments, and I'm up for my 13th year, if so approved. I understand Alaskans, I think, at this point, and understand their frustration some time of government. Sometimes that comes up in the executive branch, and so I've had the privilege of working through ethics complaints over the years of different Alaskans who want their voice to be heard, and through the course of statutes and through our Department of Administration and other ways we can deal with those appropriately. So I am available for any questions that you might have.
Thank you, and thanks for your volunteerism and stepping up, because it makes a difference. My wife and I, through our church, actually support your institution down there on the peninsula, because it's good work what you do, especially helping many of the young Native young women get out and have an opportunity. So it's really good work, and I appreciate all of that. I'm going to ask the question because I always do, and I already know the answer, but I do put it on the record, and especially since we're looking at basically putting you back on the board again. Is there anything that may have popped up in your record recently that we would want to know about, a skeleton in the closet, any kind of recent trouble with the law or anything else? Because I'd rather ask it now so it's out in the open than be surprised by it later. So just in case there is.
As far as I know, there's no ethics complaints against me either. But for the record, no, there's nothing out there that would contaminate my leadership in this role.
Thank you. And like I said, I've watched you for some time, so I'm very well familiar. I don't have any more questions personally for you, but I'd like to open it up for the committee if they have questions. And it looks like Senator Costello. Go ahead.
Reverend Hamilton, I just want to say I really enjoy serving with you on the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and I'm really impressed by your willingness to serve the public in so many very important areas. And it just seems like you're a real asset to this board, and I'm really glad that you're seeking a reappointment and that you've been able to get that appointment from the governor.
Yes, thank you, to the board senator. I've enjoyed working with you too.
Okay, like I said, I really do appreciate all that you do. It is more important, I think, than people realize. And this is really, quite frankly, Reverend, how things get done. People step up, they volunteer their time, and they make it work, and they take care of people one person at a time. And you and your organization has helped more people, I think, than they could possibly realize over the years. And you never know which one is going to be the next president or the next person to cure cancer or whatever it is, because you guys do amazing things there. So thanks for calling in today. But before you go, if you could stay with us for 1 second, we're just going to open up that public testimony real quick. So we'll have you online. We're going to open up public testimony on Mr. Keith Hamilton for the Personnel Board. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, we do have Andrea McLeod online. So, Andrea, if you would, go ahead again, put yourself on the record with your name, who you represent, your location, and 2 minutes of testimony, please, for Mr. Hamilton. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Andrea McLeod. I'm calling on behalf of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group to testify about Mr. Hamilton's reappointment to the Alaska Personnel Board, but it sounds like you've all made up your minds already, but I'll testify anyway. We're opposed to his reappointment on the grounds that during his time on the board, we've submitted multiple ethics complaints that the board has failed to respond to. ACPIRG believes it's important to present and, when necessary, hold public affairs officers to account in order to ensure they are working in the public interest. The Personnel Board is charged with making sure the Alaska Executive Branch Ethics Act is followed. This act exists to bring about accountability and to promote and strengthen the faith and confidence of Alaskans in their public officials. ACPIRG has submitted 2 ethics complaints in the past 2 years. The Personnel Board has failed to notify ACPIRG if and when either of these reports have had decisions made, thus violating their statutory duties. The first was submitted in May 2020. The second was submitted in March 2021. We still await a response, any communication from the Personnel Board to these complaints. This violates the Executive Branch Ethics Act, because if a complaint is dismissed or a prepared summary of the matter must be provided to the Personnel Board and the complainant. That's AS 3952335. Additionally, repeated public records requests to the Alaska Personnel Board during meetings have been unresponsive. We've actually testified in front of the board and about their failure to respond to these complaints and records requests properly, and sent multiple written communications to no avail. Earlier in the session, we provided a letter to the House and Senate State Affairs Committees that I believe you should all have gotten. I could follow up with that if you'd like. Alaskans expect to have faith and confidence that their public officers work for the public's interest. Mr. Hamilton has failed to meet those expectations. For these reasons, we oppose this reappointment, and we ask you to ask Dr. Hamilton why, in his position on the Alaska Personnel Board, he's failed to uphold the duties of the board.
Thank you for calling in and testify this afternoon, Andrea, and for keeping it close to 2 minutes. I do not see anyone else online to testify. So this time we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. At this time, any further comments or questions from committee members? Go ahead, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like you to comment on what Ms. McLeod said regarding oath to office and your duty as a member of the personnel board.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I also am aware of Ms. McLeod's complaint. A week ago at the House, we also had this complaint, and I took this back to Department of Personnel, Underneath Department Administration, and the response back that I believe, you know, then and now to be true is that these concerns are outside of the scope of the personnel board. And I don't know the mechanics of how that's communicated, but it is outside of the scope. And Ms. McLeod also maybe needs to identify at some point if she's against my candidacy or against all the personnel board itself, and I just happen to be the one that's up for reconsideration.
Follow up.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for that answer. So does the personnel board have staff that respond to those requests when coming in? And does the board then basically adjudicate those situations?
So when a complaint comes in, it is, of course, taken seriously. It's stamped. And depending on the level of that, who it's going to, whether it's a state employee or the executive branch, it has to be different responses right away. But it does end up being referred out to an independent third-party attorney that reviews and determines if it is or is not a valid ethical complaint based on statute. And if so, usually, Senator, those are notified immediately when that decision has been made. But that's outside of our purview.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And it looks like no other further questions or comments from committee members. Is there anything else? This is your opportunity to obviously highlight that it happened in the House. Excuse me. And just to make sure it's clear in the Senate when somebody will highlight issues like that. So if you want to have any further comments, this is your chance.
I'm very good with the response that I've given. Thank you.
Okay, just making sure. So that being said, we have open and closed public testimony, and we're going to go ahead and finish it, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in today.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I don't know why I pushed that away. It didn't work for me. I got to keep the microphone close. Moving on. So this being said, we're going to switch over to Senator Costello. Do you have a motion for the appointees?
In accordance with Alaska Statute 3905080, the Senate State Affairs Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Ms. Varna for the position of Commissioner of Department of Administration, and Mr. Hamilton for a position on the Personnel Board.
Thanks, Senator Costello. I'd like to remind members that sign of the reports today regarding appointments to boards and commissions in no way reflects individual members' approval or disapproval of the appointees. The nominations are merely forwarded to the full legislature for confirmation or rejection. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Affairs is back on the record. going to bring up previously heard Senate Bill 66 from Senator Begich. This bill was previously heard in this committee, conceptually amended and passed from committee on February 17, 2022. Due to a technical error, Senator Kawasaki's conceptual amendment was not incorporated into a CS, which was transmitted to the next committee. So we're bringing it back to fix it. The CS before members today includes that amendment. We're going to go ahead and adopt the corrected CS as the working document to accurately reflect the committee's intentions. Senator Costello, can we get a motion?
I move CS for CS 66 version 32-LS0410/India as the working document.
I'm going to go ahead and object for purposes of explanation or debate if there are any. So does anyone have any questions or comments that they'd like to highlight for us at this time? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and remove my objections. So at this time, that version India will be the working document. And for this, oh, there she is. So she went from there to there. If the sponsors, staff would like to come up if you have any comments that you'd like. Well, and we actually have the senator. I didn't see him. So if you guys would like to come up and make any comments to this, we'll make it clear, and then we'll keep it moving.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Begich, for the record, I have no comments. I just am hopeful that we can move this process forward fast.
You and me both, Senator. So, okay, that being said, do we have any comments or questions from committee members? I appreciate you guys coming. This was intended to be fast today, just so we had the appropriate CS in front of us. So without further questions or comments, seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Costello, could you give me a motion for the will of the committee?
Chair Schauer, I move that CS for Senate Bill 66 version 32-LS0410/India be moved from committee with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and accompanying documents.
Does anybody object to moving the bill out of committee? Didn't think so. Seeing or hearing none, Senate Bill 66 passed from committee. We'll take a brief idea to sign the paperwork and move it again. Thanks for coming, you guys.
And
let's go back on the record.
And thank you to you, your staff, and Senator Costello for her work in helping make this all work out.
Apologize it took so long, but at least we got it done. Thank you, guys. We're going to go take an ID to sign paperwork. State Affairs is back on the record. We're going to move on to Senate Joint Resolution 20, urging the United States Congress to pass the Hearing Protection Act. This is from Senator Rebeck, which has been heard before. Public testimony is taken, and I'm intending to move it out of committee today. Sponsor staff is here with us. If you want to put yourself on the record, any further comments from the sponsor or the staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rebeck. Just quickly, Senate Joint Resolution 20 urges Congress to pass the Hearing Protection Act, which will, if that act in the federal government passes, then that would simplify the process of purchasing suppressors for law-abiding Americans who wish to protect their hearing. And that's all we have. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And do committee members have any questions or comments at this time? I think we thoroughly vetted this one, talked about it before. As I said, I just want to highlight one more time, this isn't about, there is a misconception about them as silencers. It's not what they are. They merely suppress the sound so it's not so loud, and they are large, and it's not something people hide for crime and other things like they do in the movies with a little tiny suppressor about this big on James Bond's gun. No, they're about that big. And so anyways, a little more to it. So I appreciate you guys bringing it forward. Seeing no further action of the bill, Senator Costello, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Chair Schauer, I move that SJR 20 version 32-LS1374/alpha be moved from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Does anybody object to moving the bill from committee? Thank you. Seeing and hearing none, Senate Joint Resolution 20 passed from committee. We'll take a brief of the side of the paperwork. Thank you. Senate State Affairs back on the record. Moving on to Senate Bill 207, an act restricting the release of certain records of convictions and providing for an effective date. In the last meeting, we amended the bill, and we're going to go ahead and accept the new version as a working document today. So, Senator Costello, do you have a motion for the committee, please?
Chair Schauer, I move that Senate Bill 207, version 32-LS1601, / Bravo, as amended, be adopted as the before the committee.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and object for purposes of discussion, just to go over it one more time. What happened was we took the intent section and we basically chopped it in half. And so it made it a little bit cleaner. The committee members seemed to be fine with that. So I just wanted to bring it up for the record that we have the working draft in front of us that now for legislative intent is much smaller. And all it reads is that it is the intent of the legislature to reduce barriers to employment for people who have been convicted of low-level marijuana possession crimes that would be legal on January 1, 2023. And there was a longer section that talked about other low-level crimes. It made it sound as if it could apply to more, so it was just a cleaning amendment. So that's my explanation for it. Any comments or questions from committee members further? Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection. And at this time, version B is now the working document in front of us. Do committee members have any further questions or comments on the working document as it is? All right, we're going to go ahead and open public testimony at this time on Senate Bill 207. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I don't see anybody online. Okay, so seeing and hearing none as well, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony on Senate Bill 207. Any further comments or questions? Okay, seeing no further action on the bill, Senator Costello, do you have a motion for the will of the committee?
Chair Schauer, I move that Senate Bill 207, version 32-LS1601, / Bravo, be moved from committee as amended with attached fiscal notes, individual recommendations, and accompanying documents.
Does anybody object to moving the bill out of the committee? Saying it. Yes, ma'am. Nancy. That's, oh, good catch. Thank you. Can you just reread it without that? Sorry. We left it in there. That's our fault.
I move that Senate Bill 207, version 32-LS1601, / Bravo, be moved from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Does anybody object to moving the version out of committee? We'll get it right. That's our fault. Thank you for the catch, Nancy. We'll go ahead and take a Senate Bill 207 will pass from committee. We'll take a brief to sign the paperwork. Senate State Affairs is back on the record. We're going to go with our final bill today, Senate Bill 195, an act relating to the compensation of certain public officials, officers, and employees not covered by collective bargaining agreements and provide for an effective date. This is from Senator Keel. Senator Keel is already at the table, so when you're ready, sir, you and staff put yourself on the record. You know how it works, and begin the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel, and it is my privilege to represent Senate District Q. The title kind of says it. This is a pay bill for those folks who are not in a union. Specifically, Mr. Chairman, this is a pay catch-up bill. This is making up for lost ground. So the bill talks about exempt and partially exempt employees, which is state pay plan and statute lingo for public workers who aren't in a union. And I just want to cover briefly the bulk of the folks we're talking about. We're talking first and foremost about everybody at the Department of Law, from the civil attorneys to the prosecutors to the admin clerks and the paralegals. We are talking about folks at a lot of our public corporations, the line employees at the Industrial Development and Export Authority, who are non-executive, who do the investment analysis for ADA, the folks at the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. It also includes political appointees. So not commissioners, right? We have a State Officers Compensation Commission that covers them and us. But political appointees within the departments are not members of a union. Neither are our staff, Mr. Chairman. It also covers all of the employees, every single one at the Alaska court system, from staff attorneys and bailiffs and clerks through to the judges. And then, of course, I'd be remiss not to mention the nonpartisan staff at the Legislative Affairs Agency. So all told, we're talking about roughly 2,400 state workers who are covered by this. So why does it matter? Historically, when the largest state employee union, the general government unit, represented by the Alaska State Employees Association, negotiates a contract with any kind of pay increase, the legislature has come in and applied afterwards those same pay increases to exempt and partially exempt employees. We didn't do that the last time around. So what Senate Bill 195 does is simply to catch up. We are one full contract cycle behind, and what you'll see in the bill is that in two steps, it takes us up 5% on their pay. Now, Mr. Chairman, there'd be nothing wrong with taking us up 5% all at once. That'd be perfectly appropriate, but because for GGU, that came over time, I drafted the bill to implement this step up over time so that they catch up. Mr. Chairman, you've heard already in the confirmation of the admin hearing on the admin commissioner today about some of the difficulties we have with recruitment. That happens across all of our agencies. It's happening in the private sector. That doesn't get any easier when you're 5% behind someone doing a comparable job in a different department. Without catching them up, it's going to feed into the retention problem too, because it just doesn't make sense to stay at the Department of Law doing technical work or clerical work when you could make 5% more walking across the street. It doesn't make sense for us not to retain these employees. Put simply, when Alaskans need state government to do something, we have to pay somebody to do it. This is an equality bill. It catches up those folks who aren't in a union with those folks who are. Mr. Chairman, I am happy to take any questions. I am joined by Kathy Schlinghide of my staff, who actually understands all the technical ins and outs of the bill. And I believe the Director of Personnel and Labor Relations for the state is here when you ask questions that we can't answer, which I think inevitable given the members of the committee.
So before we go to that, we'll go ahead and open it up for the sponsor itself. So the committee members, Senator Costello.
Thank you. I appreciate the explanation of who this applies to. And I was curious if at some point we could just get what the salary schedule would look like if this bill were to pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if the members will look to the bill, the salary schedule is repealed and reenacted with that first step. So what you see there is the current exempt and partially exempt schedule plus 2.5%. And then, of course, if you'd like, we could produce that with the change the following fiscal year up another 2.5%. It would just be a calculator work.
Senator Cubs. Yeah. Senator Kovsaki.
Yep, thank you. And is there an analysis of how much retirement would be impacted by this particular bill?
Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Kawasaki, I don't have a standalone analysis. The PERS and TERS systems bake in certain assumptions about the growth in wages. Those have come true for union employees, and they have lagged now for these employees. So this is well within the actuarial assumptions made by the ARM board in funding the PERS and TERS, excuse me, not the TERS system. That doesn't apply, but the public employee retirement system in defined benefits. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Seeing no other questions for the sponsor at the moment, if we can go over the sectional analysis with Kathy and then perhaps just the fiscal note as well while we have you, when you're ready.
For the record, this is Kathy Schlinghide, staff to Senator Keel. Section 1 of the bill repeals and reenacts the salary schedule. So this is a 2.5% increase. And this in this section applies to executive branch, partially exempt employees, and those not covered by a collective bargaining unit, and to legislative employees. Section 2 of the bill is an additional 2.5% increase for those same employees in FY24. Section 3 of the bill repeals a defunct section of statute which changed salaries in 2015. Section 4 says that the salary increases from Sections 1 and 2 apply to exempt executive branch employees. Section 5 says that the increases from Sections 1 and 2 apply to judicial branch employees. Section 6 applies the increases in Section 1 and 2 to University of Alaska employees. And Section 7 is the effective date so that the increase of Section 1 of the bill takes place in FY23.
And Section 6, what Alaska, University of Alaska employees would this apply to?
I don't have that at this time, Mr. Chair, but I can bring that back to the committee.
Okay. Quite frankly, I mean, I read it before and I kind of skipped over until she just said it. I'm like, they don't really, doesn't catch me as the ones that would fall under this, but obviously they do at some point. So if we could get a little further fidelity, I'd be curious to know how many we're talking about there and what they do. I certainly understand the other ones in government function. I think we forget that the university is kind of a quasi-government entity and it falls out sometimes when we talk about public employees in general. So I'd appreciate that if we could get something to the committee to share.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Keel. We will do that. Of course, there are, I believe, three bargaining units at the university that cover a large number of those employees with union contracts. This would not apply to them.
Right. Okay. If they could get that, that would be great. That kind of caught me. I should have asked that question of you before. Other questions or comments from committee members this time? Okay. You want to go over the fiscal note, please?
Yes, Mr.
Oh, do you want to do that? Okay, thanks. Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note, I want to start by thanking the Office of Management and Budget. They crunched together a comprehensive fiscal note, and there was a little bit of confusion with one entity, so they reworked this today. They did yeoman's work, and I really appreciate it. What you have before you is a fiscal note that covers all three branches of government. So this is the total number, including the legislature, including the judiciary, and the executive branch. What you'll see is that each step costs in the neighborhood of $8.5 million, specifically the first year, $8.6 million. The second year, an additional $8.8 million. Of that, approximately $5.8 million each time is UGF. There's a little bit of designated general fund, and the rest is interagency receipts.
Okay. Do you anticipate cost increases of other services and things like university, et cetera? With those program receipts to make up some of this revenue to pay for it?
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the Office of Management and Budget did include the university in this fiscal note. We can double check that if you'd like.
I would, please. Thank you. Just be curious to know if we're passing on any of the cost increases for wages to any other, you know, the public, et cetera. You know, when you start talking university and tuition and things like that, is there going to be an impact to it? A little bit along the lines of Scott Cutler. Senator Kawasaki's questions, not first name, sorry. Okay. Good. And on the, do we anticipate another fiscal note, or is this going to be just the only one we get? And I'm asking because I know we were rushing to get this out. Is this what they consider to be the final one, or do you expect anything else to come out?
Mr. Chair, this is Kathy Schlingheit for the record. We expect this to be the final fiscal
okay,
note.
Okay, thank you. And did you have any desire or need to call the lifeline behind you, or do you think we're good? Is there anything that they wanted to testify to today?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe the administration has prepared testimony. You're welcome to verify that. And if we've answered the committee's questions with a couple of research projects to get back to you, I think that's what we needed.
I believe it was, and I appreciate this. So is there any final? I am having one of those days, I will tell you. Any final comments from committee members today? It just, yeah, that time of year. This is like Wednesday over the hump in the middle of the session. Okay, at this time, thank you. We're going to go ahead and set the bill aside. You guys are cleared off. And if anybody has amendments, if you get them to our office by April 1st, close the business, that would be appreciated. This will conclude our business for today. Senate State Affairs Committee will be meeting again this Thursday, March 31st, 2022 at 3:30 p.m. back in this room. Seeing no further business for the committee, we're going to gavel out at 4:36 p.m.